god, we're back again. Brothers, sisters, everybody sing. Yeah.
It's not Backstreet that's back, but me, Ferg, her, Heather,
yep,
the newest new old friend gurgling away, or not, and another chapter of Crimes, Clues, ooh, and Christmas.
Yesterday, things took a darker turn and have left Artridge in a familiar place with bodies stacking up around him.
Ooh.
Can he and Inspector Aralby solve the case?
Can they?
Oh. Can they?
Tell us. Why won't you tell us, sister? Oh, because we're telling you. Now, we'll find out after another round of hashtag Noff Quiz. Question 20.
What was Christmas number one?
Quiz Quingle.
What? It's Christmas.
Quiz Packham. Come on, Heather.
What was Christmas number one in 2020?
Oh, look, you're a professional. You can do this.
What was Christmas number one in 2020?
What was Christmas number one in 2020? I've no idea. And if I'm honest, I want to get back to the ballet. So, crimes,
clues,
and Christmas.
Ding, ding. Ding.
Crimes, Clues and Christmas, Chapter 20.
It had been a couple of days since Inspector O'Rowby declared the murder of Daisy Love a closed case, and the city was deep into preparations for the festive season. All around me, shops, restaurants and houses were decorated ready for Christmas. But for some reason, I was feeling listless. I drifted around London aimlessly. I'd no work on, and it was hardly like there was going to rustle anything up this side of the celebration, so no real point my sticking around the office. After the big day, no doubt I'd be pressed into service locating some stolen piece or other. It's amazing to me that people spend small fortunes on gifts for loved ones, which they leave barely hidden in the backs of wardrobes, and then spend countless evenings away from the family home at all the soirees of the season, and don't even leave a light on. It's a bit like the reverse of those roadside hotels you see, which have an electrified sign with lights up to advertise vacancies. The very absence of light in the larger suburban houses at this time of year acts as an inverse beacon to members of the criminal classes. I let my feet wander where they may, taking me to and fro, and then for variety they'd carry me fro and then to, which is almost as unusual as going thither before hither, or spying jetsam before flotsam on the open seas. I stopped in at a few hostelries for a drink or two, saw some friends and acquaintances to wish them well and pull a cracker. Indeed, I even accepted an invite to visit with the Duke and Duchess of Richtenstein, Turtle and Michelle.
Are you feeling all right, Mr. Artridge?
Asked Michelle with concern. Oh yes, fine. Sorry, just tired, I suppose. It's fabulous to see you two looking so well. Three, I should say. For the intervening year had produced an heir to the Richtenstein title, a bouncing baby girl the couple had called Shelley. Not after the poet, but to keep with the testudinal bent of family names. Yeah, said Turtle, dandling his daughter on his knee. You don't seem to be yourself at all. Are you thinking about last year when you almost died? Remember, you had the rope around your neck and it was well scary. I thought for a second Michelle was going to let him hang you and everything. Must be rough having that memory like.
Turtle, Mr. Artridge doesn't need to think about that,
chided Michelle, tucking her ringlets behind her ears. Right, yeah, of course. Sorry, Duchess, Mr. Artridge. Maybe I could recite a poem for you, Artridge. You know, take your mind off you almost getting hanged. Actually, is that the time? I totally forgot. I have an appointment at my club. Awfully sorry to cut and run, but you know what it's like this time of year? Diary full to bursting and all that. I made my goodbyes and began to wend my way to the club. I suppose Turtle wasn't wrong. The memories of last year did occasionally cause me to wake with a start, and perhaps seeing all the trappings of Christmas and hearing the carols, one in particular, was a bit jarring. But I fancy I knew the root cause of my malaise. I was lonely. I'd not found a good excuse to return to the theatre and hope to bump into Chas McConstance, and I'm ashamed to admit I didn't have the bravery to simply turn up and see her for seeing her sake. So it was, with a heavier heart than is ideal, that I plonked myself down into my favourite chair in the games room, its green leather releasing its soothing musk, and greeted Wilson.
All right, Artridge, lad. Where have you been these last few days, then? You've been working a case?
Yes. Yes, employed by Rawlins, actually. At least, I think I was employed. I had a moment of realisation. We never actually quite got round to settling on a fee, now I think about it.
Ah, you hear that? He's not as daft as he looks, Mr. Rawlins. Tell you what, your first drink and go in his tub. What are you having?
I don't suppose you've got a pint of cloudy cider, have you? I asked, hopefully.
Afraid not.
Gimlet, then, please.
Coming right up. Is money the cause of your anteater impression, then?
Anteater impression?
The long face. I took my nephew to Wimbledon Zoo the other day. You know, next to the tennis club. You should see the things. They've got these huge, long, thin noses with great tongues that fire out and scoop up all the ants like. Fascinating.
I was inclined to accept Wilson's zoological ramblings as he was delivering them whilst delivering me a free gimlet. But then he said,
I reckon woman trouble is the cause
of an anteater's oddly shaped head.
What? How would that work?
Well, I don't know. You're the expert. Maybe the female anteater has an intensely concave face, so the male had to develop the long, thin nose because facial tessellation is required for copulation.
Copulation? Tessellation? I've not got the education. But it doesn't matter. I meant your long face. Woman trouble is the cause of your long face.
The dawn of realisation broke through the night of incomprehension and shone the sunlight of understanding on the subject, utterly torturing a metaphor in the process.
Do you know,
I said, settling myself into the worn leather of my favourite throne.
I think you might have something there, Wilson. There is a woman involved.
I was all set to have Wilson hack his way through the thorny issue of my romantic life, like Prince Philip on his way to reach Sleeping Beauty. But he was stopped before he could start working his magic by my being summoned once again to go see Eldridge Rawlins, club chairman at large. I necked the gimlet and bade Wilson adieu, promising to return and continue our chat presently.
Aye, no worries, Artridge. Be sure to touch him for your fee, mind. That'll make you smile.
He laughed after me. The last time I was sat outside the august office of old Rawlins, I wasn't sure what fate had in store for me behind those mahogany doors, and had about me the air of a nervous schoolboy. But on this occasion, I felt confident what was coming was a pat on the back and hopefully something in the way of financial remuneration for services rendered. After all, hadn't your faithful hero squared away the business of the missing costume jewellery in pretty sprightly fashion? Now, granted, the culprit of said heist hadn't been brought to justice per se, being as she was crushed from above by a sandbag of the rogue variety, but the fact remained the case had been solved by yours truly. So I felt perfectly happy to engage Florence Rawlins in some of her patented bamboozling conversation. I might even see if I could sneak some more details.
So, Florence, how's the book going?
It's not going anywhere, dear. I just type the words on the typewriter. They appear on the paper and then I put the paper in a pile over there. It doesn't go anywhere.
A brilliant start from Flo.
Quite right, my mistake. I meant, how are you finding it?
It's where I left it, Mr. Artridge. I just told you, it doesn't go anywhere.
Right again. Sorry, I'm not quite firing on all cylinders here, am I?
I don't know what you mean.
It just means I'm not at full strength, like a car, the engine.
Oh, I see. That reminds me of a story in the book about this one time when Eldridge and myself were on a driving holiday and we broke down in the foothills of Mount Etna in Italy. Well, there we were in the middle of nowhere when all of a sudden these two enormous Italians appeared surrounded by goats. Shoulders as wide as Venice canals they had. I think they were probably goat herders, but we didn't ask. Couldn't speak a word of Italian, so how we all ended
up... Before she could tell me how or what they ended up doing with this pair of strapping Sicilians, which I'm sure would have been scintillating, Eldridge appeared in his doorway with unerring timing. I'd say he had a sixth sense, but it was more like he had the usual five, but his hearing was heightened due to the sheer wingspan of his lug holes. Either way, he cut his wife off before she could get to the good stuff.
Ah, Martridge, sorry to have kept you waiting. I trust my wife wasn't telling tall tales.
She didn't mention their heights, it was their girth she was commenting on.
What? Florence, what have I told you about not telling your stories at the club?
They're my memories, Eldridge. I have to enjoy my memories. You can't begrudge me that.
The poor woman visibly deflated, and there was just a hint of an edge in her soft eyes.
No, dear. Of course you can enjoy them, but you don't need to share them to enjoy them, do you?
You used to enjoy sharing all sorts. Remember that time?
I don't actually have time to remember that time at this time, as it's high time Artridge and I had some quiet time to discuss the jewellery case.
Florence sighed and stood up.
I'll get my notepad.
No, dear, that won't be necessary. We're just going to have a little chat man to man. You're okay with that, Artridge?
He stepped back and held his hand out into his office, inviting me in. Of course, sir, I said, stepping past him. Lovely speaking with you, Florence.
You too, Mr. Artridge. Oh, darling.
She was talking to her husband now, not me.
We've been invited to a dinner at the Hausbergs tomorrow night. Shall I accept?
Afraid not, dear. I'm needed at the ballet, rehearsing in the new prima and they need some signatures or some such nonsense. Terribly dull. I'll make it up to you, though.
Okay.
She looked so sad as she sat back behind her little desk that I felt a little bad for the fun I'd had from her in the past. But her husband didn't seem to notice the melancholy of his wife, and he closed the door behind me and took his seat at his own, much more impressive desk.
Care for a little sniff, Sir Artridge? Take the edge off. I got this at an auction. Had to outbid a Belgian royal for it. It's brandy from the court of Louis the something or other, so they tell me. Delicious, what I call it.
Thank you, sir. I took the proffered glass and raised it skyward. To the memory of Daisy Love.
Yes, good show. To Daisy Love.
He joined in and quaffed his glass.
Now then, would I be right in thinking you're a little unsatisfied about how the whole thing ended?
I was astounded at the old man's perspicacity. Other than my brief chat with O'Ralby in the immediate aftermath of discovering Marlena and Cakey's bodies, I hadn't said a word to anyone about my misgivings. Clearly, one doesn't rise to the station in life Eldridge Rawlins had achieved without an insightful mind. Well, truth be told, sir, it does feel a little convenient to pin the whole thing on two people who can't defend themselves. Why would they go to such lengths with the candle when Cakey had already said he could rig something to release the rope and sandbag on a timer in any case? Rawlins looked at me with bug eyes.
What on earth are you blathering on about? Of course it was the German and the convict.
Of course, his rise could also have been due to family connections, the power of the old school tie, and the inherently biased system of privilege and patronage our great country is founded upon.
Stands to reason it was them. She was German, and he was a convict for a start. Plus, why else would they top themselves like Romeo and Juliet? No, no, I was talking about your involvement in the whole blasted shooting match. I brought you in to sort out a simple jewel theft, which you handled admirably, by the way, and then it all spiralled out of control, and you're in the middle of another awful bloody murder case. To top it all, I failed to instruct Doc Clitheroe to pay you a bean. Bad form on my part. Bad form. Total oversight, of course. Simple mistake.
As you know, I was far from convinced that the police's theory was quite as watertight as all that. But as you're also aware, I'm not averse to getting paid for work delivered, so kept my thoughts to myself.
So, what shall we say then? What's the going rate?
There are few finer sights for a man engaged in the art investigation game than a client, for whom one has already completed the task at hand, sat before you poised over their checkbook with pen in hand. The fact he was asking me to effectively name my price made me feel almost giddy.
Shall we say 100?
I tentatively threw out. But the speed at which Rawlins gleefully agreed and began to ink in the figure tempted me to add,
a day?
And see what happened.
100 a day, eh?
He placed the end of his pen inside his cavernous ear and gave it a little wiggle.
You were only on the job a day and a half, weren't you?
If I'd known a day rate was on the cards, I would have strung the thing out a little. But £150 was more than fair going, considering I'd feared it had been an unwitting pro bono situation just minutes previously.
Yes, don't look to hang around if I can help it, I replied.
Good man. Tell you what, let's say £200 in recognition of your efficiency, eh?
Well, thank you, sir.
Not a bit of it. Eldridge Rawlins, look after those that do him right. Oh, and of course you'll sit at my table for the club Christmas function, no doubt.
What an honour.
I could practically taste Scott's scotch already. I left the office and returned to Wilson a happier man, although as I retook my pew, the same feeling of ennui washed back over me. What was the point of being flush with the folding if one didn't have anyone to spend it on? Which is why I was quite so heartened when Wilson informed me,
"You missed a call while you were in there, Mr. Artridge. A Ms. McConstance has asked you to call her back at your earliest convenience."
Huzzah!
I yelped as I leapt from my seat and rushed to the club phone.
"Good luck with the tessellation,"
Wilson shouted after me. Crimes, Clues and Christmas is a New Old Friends production, part of the Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears podcast series. Written and performed by Fergus Woods-Dunlop and Heather Westwell, with sound and music by Fred Riding. New Old Friends gratefully acknowledge the support of Arts Council England in making Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears.